Jordan Peele's Nope is one of those super, super anticipated movies. He's one of the great filmmakers working right now. And the movie is packed with meaning and layers and messages, and it's entertaining. And we're talking about it today with his editor from the inside out. I'm George Edelman, host of the No Film School podcast. And my guest today is Nicholas Mansour, editor of Nope, among other things. Nick and I go way, way, way back, and it was great to catch up again in general. But specifically today, just to talk about Nope, about editing, and about putting movies together. Because we're both from Los Angeles, and we went to school together, and we have sort of a similar background in terms of being analytical about art, it was fun to talk to somebody like that about putting this movie together. Because this is a movie that has tons of depth. It's all there for people to look at, interpret, reflect back, and examine. And Nick really goes through with me how he worked with Jordan Peele throughout the process, from the very first ideas all the way to the final cut on that very thing, the meaning, the story, the perspective, and the cinematic language, which is always a tricky term, right? Behind this movie. So here we go. Nick Mansour on Nope. I saw the movie. Movie's great. And there's so much to talk about. And I know you don't have a ton of time. But I'm actually glad, because I know you. Go back a little bit. I know where you come from. The movie is so... This is one of these things that's unique about the Jordan Peele movies and about this one is it has layers and it has meaning and it has symbols and it has allegory and it has stuff going on. And that's just something that's a treat to see in a movie, in a feature film released at this scale. And so I guess what I want to start with is just talking about Nope before we talk about anything else, really. How do you guys discuss creating meaning or like leading audiences to places where they draw their own conclusions or where you kind of want them to see one specific thing? Because there's all kinds of interpretations out there, right?
Right.
And it's so much as happens in the edit and the juxtaposition of things, right?
Yeah, totally. And that what you're responding to is very much what I respond to when Jordan first tells me an idea or I read a script is like, I'm astounded how much he layers in to a script, even at the earliest phase, and how it seems to kind of organically come out of the characters and the plot and the setting rather than all being, you know, references like peppered in or something. So to a large extent, I mean, we definitely talk about it because I think what... We both think that way or, you know, in different ways, but it's the commonality is that we're kind of watching on multiple levels a lot of things. And I think he knows his audience likes to do that too.
Do you think a lot of audiences like to do that and that they just aren't given the opportunity?
I do. I've always felt that. I mean, the trick is, we don't just have like a kind of neutral marketplace where every movie is just a, you know, white cover with a title on it. And you go by a sort of central review committee tells you which ones are the best. Like, it, you know, so it doesn't always work out. But I don't think it's usually because a movie is too thematically or conceptually demanding that people don't respond to it. I think it's the art of balancing it with story and characters and other stuff.
Yeah, it's entertaining still, right? I mean, I know I'm throwing too much at you already, but no. to balance the movie that is like big tentpole, IMAX, all that, and like compelling story, and like we're trying to say something, like, can you just, why don't we start again, like with just initial conversations you and he have about what this is going to be, how it's going to come together. And like that balance.
Well, the part of the trick of keeping the meaning in, this sounds sort of cagey without me trying to be, but is honestly not to break the bubble while we're working on it, to not tear it apart too much while we're working on it. But so I do think that's why Jordan likes finding collaborators that he works with repeatedly, because you kind of start to, there is a little bit of a telepathy thing, or what I pull out of the script. We'll talk about it, but then we kind of operate more from looking at the material and in a really kind of, I think the language we use the whole time is about the audience experience. And is this fun? Is this exciting? Is this scary? Is this who they're relating to, which characters they're relating to in a scene, and why? But in terms of breaking down all the other layers, that'll usually be after we kind of settle on a scene and find a shape. Then we'll be like, oh my God, that's great, because this. But it's hard to work from the inside out like that, because if you're too concerned with the... Now, that said, while I'm cutting silently in my head, I'm definitely looking at a detail in the frame or a way a character reacts to something and thinking, oh, that's an interesting reaction, you know, to seeing something, because it's not obvious and you have to think about why. And to me, why is because actually it's scary, even though it doesn't appear to be scary. Why is it scary? Well, that relates to the theme of, you know. So anyway, I think that I'm always thinking that way in my head. And maybe Jordan is too. I just think we just kind of have to like protect the thing and not tear it to shreds.
So you both, you read it and you sort of think, oh, I think I see what he's doing with all this. There's a lot here. And then you get to the cut and you start putting it together. And in your head, you're like, I see little special things happening here, but we're not going to talk about it until we see it laid down, because we don't want to distract from telling a good story. Is that kind of the...
I think that's pretty close. I mean, look, it's a long process. It's a year. So there's ups and downs. There's emotional highs and lows where you're like, right, what are we doing? Why are we doing this? And then you go... But Jordan does have a confidence from his sort of the initial seed idea that he's always got. And the absurdly for Jordan Peele, like, and other people have mentioned this too, he'll actually take the time before the script while he's still writing it to like pitch it. And he'll tell me the whole thing beginning to end, scene by scene. Often that'll change then when I read a draft. I'll be like, oh, I see he changed that to that. But you get to kind of start to... He's completely open book with his process.
Fascinating.
Which I think he can do, because you still can't figure out how he did it. Even though he's telling you everything he's thinking about, even though you see the changes from draft to draft, even though he's asking your opinion, people's opinions, and taking the advice, there's still a part that comes out once it goes through him, you're like, I don't know where he thought of that. And it's perfect. Like that, now I understand. So, you know.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When you get those drafts, is there a part of you that starts thinking about things like from an editor's perspective? And can you talk to us about how you think of a script as an editor? Like, what does an editor think like when you read a script? Like, what is it? What occurs to you? Do you start thinking about, because you don't know what footage, you don't know, you know, there's so much not there. And you're, but in a way, the fact that he brings you in early is so cool, because you have a relationship to the evolution of the piece from idea to end. And
definitely in terms of getting the script and my first reactions to it, or how I start to think about how we're going to edit it, I think there's, you know, always trying to keep alive the kind of intuitive reaction to the stuff, and then also getting really analytical about it. And that's the weird personality type I think you sort of have to have, is a little bit of right brain, left brain in equal measure.
Analytical and, about specifics to cut, or analytical, yes, about because, things like meaning and things like that.
Well, I know from Jordan that he has he always has this core to the characters and to the story and to the themes, but the details will continue to evolve through pre-production, production, and the edit. I mean, we'll be tweaking dialogue that is off screen, will be the whole way. We'll be changing slight order of shots and scenes the whole way. He'll be changing the look of some of the VFX the whole way. So you never quite have a solid, object, but you have this solid idea of the characters, the story, and the concepts. And because I know that he was even pushing that even further on this one, of building this whole world to shoot in, I mean, they built the ranch, they built the amusement park, they built, it's all geographically accurate. Like, you can't.
It's in Agua Dulce, I assume? Yeah, I've been out there.
It's in Agua Dulce. Yeah. And, but like, they are next to each other, the house, yeah. The ranch, and the, it's all that valley for real, which gave them the opportunity to explore it. And then the same with in every room, there's a depth of all the props in there that the actors know what they all are. And can think about it or talk about it and go into it. So there's this whole world they're exploring there. So I knew it was going to be loose. So that meant that I knew the footage, like you said, that I get in is not going to necessarily reflect what's in the script. And especially because Jordan has a shorthand with these actors and they'll take things in a new direction. Hoyte is always looking as a DP. It was an amazing experience because he's always looking for something he's never seen before. So that's hard to put into a storyboard or previs, but when he's there and they're breaking down what the shots are actually going to be, it changes. So I'll get something in. Often maybe the script supervisor didn't necessarily pick up on what that was either. So I'll often get something in while I'll be like, what's this? I have no clue. I know I can ask for the answer and I will, but often first I'll try and log what I intuitively think it is and try something
in relationship to what else you got and to what the script is and all of that. Yeah,
exactly. I'll get something just labeled X. That's a landscape shot. And I'll say, well, they could have meant that for any one of these places, but I'm also going to store it in a place where I know where it is and when it feels like I need it. And we were doing that a ton with, like, even with the VFX plates, things that weren't even necessarily shot in relation to a scene became part of this world that we got to cut to. So because of that, you still have to be able to set goals for yourself. And because you get the footage out of order, you still have to know how to approach a scene for the first time. And if you don't really, so there's things that I've learned from other editors and just from my own process, but breaking down the script, reading, I would read through the script a couple different ways. I would break down the script in page count, in scene count, and then plotting out kind of like, I do it on paper, which is stupid because I'm sure there's programs that do this, but it's sort of the tactile way I've learned to do it. But, you know, I'll break out where a character appears, sort of different quality scenes, like here's where these characters meet, here's where an incident happened, you know. And then I can kind of, and usually the page count is a better way to break that down. Because the other way that a lot of editors work is scene cards.
Yeah.
And that does work, but the scene numbers don't correspond to where they fall in the structure necessarily.
Are you sort of looking for, I had thought images from the movie pop in my head as you described that. Like, I thought about the way, I was really struck by Emerald's arrival and the way she looks from the perspective of OJ in that first scene when he's calling to her, and the way OJ looks from the perspective of Emerald at the very end of the movie. And I thought about these as like these visual bookends that were kind of like perfect. But I think that there's probably stuff like that all throughout the movie that, like, deep in scenes, but like that you're talking about, like, you're trying to map from the beginning who's who in relationship to us and each other so you can have something to hang on each as you go. Like, this is important for Emerald because in this scene we need to, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I don't know how that the discovery between for Hoyte and for Jordan was. I don't know how much they spelled it out that, like, you know what, we're going to really lock this, the way we shoot this into points of views because blah, blah, blah. Or if they just knew they needed to do it that way.
Some of it feels like the edit. Though, because it's the what comes before is the person looking, and then what comes after is that shot. So it feels like we're put in their perspective, however they
we all know from, I mean, I think experimental films have led the way in terms of figuring out how this stuff works. Where does the language break? Like, where you can't just stay in a POV the whole time because then you lose the sense of who it is watching. And so, there is a balance you have to find in the edit, but they did really shoot that way. They weren't getting extraneous perspectives a ton. unless there was a point, unless it really said something as a frame in and of itself. There's a massive wide in that commercial scene that shows the whole thing with the green square of the green screen behind Daniel. And that's very intentional, you know, and there's a reason it's doing everything it's doing. It isn't just cut. I mean, Jordan literally, you know, he was like, he was warning me as he was shooting. He was like, look, we shot Listen to This, but I'm kind of just like thinking, forget coverage. Like, let's just this.
Yeah. Yeah.
He didn't go. That sounds more extreme than what they
did. But it was shot to edit a certain way, is what you're saying. Like, it was shot to mean a certain thing to come to unfold a certain way.
Close. It was shot. I think it was still the whole scene would run from all these angles. So the edit points weren't necessarily figured out. Yeah. But the perspectives of the viewer were very intentional. So that commercial scene was always thought, you got to feel like you're Daniel up there and feel that terror and then figure out the time when it makes sense to put him on the stage. And then we're in their point of view and et cetera. So and then when we're looking at Kiki and we're not in her point of view yet, there is no shot that they shot of her looking back at OJ.
Yeah,
in there.
Right.
Because that wouldn't have made sense emotionally.
It's not her point
I think.
Of view yet. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There's a handoff that happens at different points in the movie where it becomes both of them kind of equal. And then by the end really has flipped.
Is that the kind of conversation you guys have? That's like, when is it, whose perspective are we in here? And why does it matter?
For sure. I think it can be really dazzling once you start getting into, especially individual effects scenes or really amazing locations, or the performances are all so good. You don't know where to land. And I'll recenter myself by thinking, hold on.
You go back to the notepad that you wrote on sometimes?
Oh, like absolutely. There? But I'll also look at it freshly and try and think like, well, wait, why am I not connecting either emotionally, or why is this not as scary, or why is this not as exciting? And it's often because you've lost the sense of whose story you're in. Rather, and you've just gone kind of third person with it. And the inclination, I think, often, and it works in other movies, you know, you set up a language specific to each film, kind of. It's like half new, half everything else the audience is coming loaded with. So
like Jaws feels like it's in our language when we're watching this movie, for example, or plenty of others.
Totally. Yeah. And we did talk about that, especially when it comes time to thinking about additional photography. It's like, okay, what do we wish we had thought of, or what has emerged as, you know, feeling light or whatever. And we talked about the idea of the kind of Jaws angle of the underwater or whatever that would be. And again, it was, I think that's where the theme, you have to be connected to the themes the whole time, because Jaws isn't about looking at things. Jaws isn't about capturing an image and our obsession with images and becoming part of a spectacle. If anything, it, you know, it's sort of like a pure demonic animal. There is an overlap, but there's a part of the themes that does not overlap that I think would make that kind of shot being used a lot not make sense. And it would.
Yes.
So, but I don't know how much we talked about it as much as bantered about it and just like, what about this? Nah, I don't know, you know, but we didn't like, well, here's why, here's my five reasons why. Like, there has to be a kind of intuitive part of it. And then when you stop, you get a whole cut together, you go home, you come in the next day, you watch the whole thing, and you're like, oh, okay. And then you have maybe a more theoretical conversation, but you can't, you know, you have to kind of work in phases.
There's something you just talked about briefly in there about spectacle and becoming a part of it that is like really a big part of what I want to talk about with the movie. So I'll come back to it in a second. But before we get into that kind of thing, you talked about creating a language and how it's an original language in some ways. Can you tell us, for people who are new to editing or don't understand necessarily, like, what that means? Conceptually, it sounds like something, but like, what does it mean to say at the beginning of a process with your director and stuff and be like, what's our language going to be? We're creating something new. It's built on things from the past, but like, because you reference this idea that like sometimes third person the whole way works, but not here. Like, can you talk about that? Like, and what it means?
I can try. I mean, I've tried to break this down into ways.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, even for yourself, it's useful to try and articulate. And I keep coming back to this idea of like the intuitive and the analytical, like you have to be working both ways. So the intuitive side that is you have to watch things you actually like a lot. Mm-hmm. You can't just be like, yeah, my favorite movie is this, but I watched it 15 years ago, because the thing that you will go in loaded up intuitively with it, for me, different people work differently. Yeah. I'm a sponge. So yeah. I need to make sure that I've like cultivated a good like garden in my head of, you know, and I keep a thread alive of the things that, you know, I want to see this kind of stuff. I really love, not because you're copying it, but just because there's an intuitive response you have when watching an edit of it working or not. Mm-hmm. And I think that can get manipulated by playing video games and watching cutscenes and watching reality TV and these completely different languages that don't apply to what you're trying to do necessarily in your project. So anyway, that's part of it. And then the other part I think is maybe a little more analytical where, well, okay. So then there's like a marriage between the two, which is you have taste, you know, and you can either, you have to negotiate with a filmmaker, because as an editor, I think of myself as being there to help them realize their vision. I may have really strong opinions about, yeah. I mean, you have to, I think, you know, but then you have to like deal with it.
right. Because it's not going to, yeah.
It wouldn't make sense, and you wouldn't be able to keep doing it if you really like doing it, if you just fought for only what you thought was right. And it wasn't a conversation and a support role, really. I mean, that said, a lot of directors then get to say like, no, I want you. I want that. And that becomes part of helping them. If they're like, I want you to figure this out and tell me what you think works, then great. I'm so happy to do that. So for me, I think most projects, especially when people are talking about adjectives like cinematic or elevated or, you know, masterful, or these things that when you have these expectations for something to be high art as well as entertaining, or, you know, some combination of the two, I think often that comes from something for me in terms of editing. What that translates to is not forcing the footage to be something that it isn't, unless that's a very intentional move that you're doing. So there are, you know, and this is something you do get through studying and reading, at least I do, is, you know, learning like, oh, okay, like there are kind of shifts in film history and that now have trickled into all of our consciousness where the editing was really supposed to call attention to itself. And that's part of the filming, evolution. You know, the in the new wave sort of language of really like montage and the editing being really calling attention to itself. And that's great. But often it was shot with that intention too. It was like shot just wild, knowing that I'm going to figure this out editing it. If you try and graft that approach onto something that was shot very intentionally,
could be a mess.
Usually that ends up making it feel like almost a parody of something or, right. And so anyway, I may come loaded up with all sorts of ideas of what the language is going to be. But as soon as I start to see the footage, I try to have a blank response to it. I try to forget those conversations when I'm first looking at the material of a scene, because I'm like, this is a slow, sad scene. Like, this is an emotional scene. It may have been made me laugh in the script, but not now. So
yeah.
If I try and make this scene make me laugh the way it did in the script, I'm probably missing out on all the stuff they discussed. I'm missing out on all the stuff the actor brought. I'm missing out on the light, why they lit it that way. All those things, I think you only get into these more elevated levels, I think, if you're respecting that stuff and bringing it together. Again, unless the intent is to put it in kind of quotes or, make it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you're reminding me of a Walter Murch thing, which you talked about. I think he's written about, but we interviewed him a while ago and he said he saw it like they bring the ingredients that they found and you're cooking it and the ingredients kind of dictate And I feel like it's like, that's your flow, kind of like, I don't want to come in with my old idea for the recipe. And then they have these different ingredients that I didn't expect. And then I make something that is inedible or whatever. Like you're kind of responding to what came back.
He's the master of figuring out the perfect metaphors for talking about all of this stuff.
Yeah. I mean, talked about timing. Right. Yeah. You talked about timing too, though, like how you know when, you know, the cut's long enough or short enough or when it's time. You go by feel. Is that how you do it? Or you guys talk about like holding, like, do you have a system?
Well, luckily it goes through phases because, you know, like live editing it, you would have one one impulse. So you do it kind of often. I try to do a raw kind of intuitive, not criticizing it too harshly, but internalizing the things I've thought about. Like I've read the script a number of times and I've broken it down already. That stuff kind of lives in the back of your head. So then I get the footage and I'm like, okay, well, I don't even have to think about it. I know this is about 2/3. This is at right after another scene that was really exciting. And now some air has been let out. So that's probably what's going on here.
Yeah.
I don't even have to think about it because I've just done that homework obsessively for a few weeks. So it's just in my head. So you do that raw thing. And then you're building up bigger and bigger pieces and you have to know it. You have to know you're going to do a ton of work that is probably going to go in the bin because again, as a supporter of the filmmaker, I'm trying to give them whatever tool they like to get from an editor to finish the shooting the movie. So some people don't watch cuts when they're shooting. Right. Jordan really loves basically anything. Show him as much as you want, all of it.
So you're kind of racing to get stuff together so he can take a look and see where things are going.
Yes and no. Sometimes he will I'll always ask him basically, we'll touch base every day pretty much. And I'll say like, anything from today that he'll run me through, like, this didn't go quite how I wanted. See what you can do with that, whatever. And then I'll say, you know, okay, great. Is any of that like stuff you're dying to look at? Because I could imagine since you shot how freaked out Emerald was after seeing it for the first time today and tomorrow you're shooting her the next day. It didn't quite work like that. I'm simplifying because it was on film. So there was a day and a half delay on everything.
Right.
But I could point out that, like, you know, maybe you want to see this because of that. Or maybe he'll say, you know what, I want to see this. And I won't have thought of it. So anyway, then I will try and get him something really quick. But otherwise, he tends to like to see as much as I can bring to it as I think makes sense. So I'll often take a little bit longer with Jordan to send him something with a pretty thought out sound and music idea as well. If it's a big enough piece, if it's just a sliver, that usually doesn't make any sense.
And he can start to kind of see what's working or not, or what he might want to
totally
change.
And it doesn't seem to cloud him. Other people don't like that because then they're like, wait, no, why did you put, like, now I've been thinking about it the wrong way.
Yeah.
You know, but he seems to hold on to this core thing and you can't really knock him off course. So he just likes to start thinking about that stuff early. And he's like, and gives him a sense. I think he likes being able to judge thinking. He's always thinking about the final product, I guess. So anyway, those pieces will become bigger and bigger. And as soon as you watch it in bigger and bigger segments, you go, oh, well, obviously I was completely wrong about music being there. That's stupid. Or obviously that's way too slow now. Or that went by way too fast and had no impact, you know? So in my mind, there's always that time. I'm always working towards when are we going to have a full thing to watch and watch that? Because as soon as I know from experience now, which I didn't really know starting with a feature, part of what a feature does is it sets its own clock for you. You know, I think it's part of what trailers and all the stuff at the beginning of the movie do is like you brainwashes you from the outside world.
Interesting.
And then a film starts to tell you from the first frame, this is the rhythm, this is the tempo, and it's only once you stop and go back and watch it from the beginning that you really understand the film's rhythm I think.
Speaking to you.
You try and pregame it as much as you can.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. So speaking of that, there's so much intentionality in this movie. Like there's no accidents. It feels like maybe there were some, I don't know, but it feels like there, whatever accidents happened were carved in a way to mean something. You talked about spectacle and people becoming a part of spectacle. This movie feels like it's in a lot of ways about entertainment industry and what happens when cameras turn on, how people mm-hmm. change, what fame does, how mm-hmm. deep at all stages, how deep do you guys go, you and Jordan and anyone else, in talking about what things mean? Because to me, like the way I think, I come out of the movie and I'm like, well, there's like five ways you could see it, but what it seems like it was to me was, and I have a narrative that I feel like it was, which isn't just about aliens coming. It's about other things. And I'm very curious because, you know, we have plenty of stories we put up about like, what did the ending of Nope mean? You know, that's one of the biggest like Googled things, right? Like, it's just like everybody's mm-hmm. Googling that. They come out of the movie. I work for a website. Every Sunday morning, I see the numbers spike. Like people are seeing the movie, asking the question. So how much do you guys talk about that?
Well, I think Jordan, and you'd have to ask him, but I try and glean how a director likes to work so that I'm, you know, not making their process harder. I think what he likes to do is kind of curate these discussions around him while he's working on it. And then at some point, he'll open it up. That might be kind of the logic behind why he sort of pitches it, is that he sort of sets the tone of the conversation. He already starts to get into what things mean and what the tone of the movie is. So, because he knows probably from experience, the whole rest of the shoot, like just like people do after they see the movie done, as soon as people read it, see a storyboard, see a scene shot, they're all talking about, what does that mean? Why did it, it's like, oh my God, that's so cool. Because, and if he just lets all that in, I think that probably would drive anyone insane.
Yeah.
So I think he's always open to the conversation, but I try to be aware how much I'm just dumping my own interpretation onto him out of pure excitement or wanting to do a better job or whatever, because I think there is a value in people bringing their own. I think part of what makes the movie feel hopefully more real, alive, kind of vibrant, is that people really are bringing their own relationships to these themes and ideas. And he's not necessarily whipping them all into line there.
Yes.
There's a sort of ecology of worldviews in there.
Yeah,
they aren't all totally the same.
It feels like there's a lot of ways you could take it. And I read some people and even some people on our staff were like, I felt like it was this, this, and this. And it's like, it's fascinating how we're projecting our own kind of thoughts about the world onto something almost like it's a blank slate, like it's a blank screen or whatever, but it's not. It's giving us enough input to allow us to take it in. And then we kind of reconfigure those pieces to tell our story. It's fascinating though, that you guys can do that.
For sure. But I mean, I think there are some things that where he does make sure we're aware of certain things, all everybody working on it and him and the producer, also Ian Cooper, like they really do. They cultivate a kind of discussion for us all to be having as well. And I think a big part of that obviously is the history of Black cinema, which some people may be aware of, other people may not. We all, you know, have different things. And what That's a big part of what this whole movie means is its relation. Obviously, it's in the plot and the character background of like, so I'm a nerd. So I want to talk about, I want to get into, I'm like, oh yeah, like in Killer of Sheep and like, and you know, and in actually Charles Burnett made a short film called The Horse. And you should look at that, Jordan, because, and it's like, he has his own thing, but we will, as long as we're kind of talking around the same ideas, but hopefully that's why I feel like that's what's so interesting about how open-ended he leaves things, how much room for discussion. I always think of him kind of like a good teacher in a way. Like that sounds, he would hate that probably, but I the way a good teacher can give you a
starting point and then conversation swirls.
They narrow down a world of questions for you to be asking, rather than giving you all the answers to those questions also, or leaving it totally open-ended. It's like a, you know, so I think about it that way in that, is this ambiguity the right ambiguity? Because what it makes you think about is what we want you to be thinking about, rather than does it totally subvert the meaning of something else that happens in the movie? So I bring that up in reference to kind of the history of African-American cinema and Black cinema around the world, just because I think what's so cool is that, like, I think what's so interesting about the projects that he's developed is it's the full range of human subjectivity, like, in his characters. It isn't, and yet it doesn't ignore the history of those characters and of Black people in the United States. It's completely acknowledged. Those characters are fully aware, you know, or at least have their own awareness of the whole history of American culture, you know, and are choosing to live their own way. You know, they're in the same world as we are in so many right. ways. It isn't right. like a pure fantasy. So
right, it's not scrubbed of the actual history. What you're saying is sometimes exactly. you'll see people of diverse representation, but they're there in like Captain America in a context where you're just kind of like, how? Why? Or like, you know, like, where's the history? But like, yeah, not to knock that specifically, but just sometimes you see it totally. And it's like, it's not answering for or related to our reality.
It seems like there is a lot of the generic character who could be whatever race right, rather right. than bringing right. a specificity. But also then the flip side of that is not making it only about that, because again, I don't want to speak for Jordan, but one thing that excites me and I think is behind sort of what he's doing is that, again, not to knock that, because I think it's really important to make films specifically about race relations. That's very interesting. But he feels, I think it's interesting to try and look at ways to tell stories that in every genre with all the ways people act and types of characters that acknowledges that, but isn't only about that. So that seems to be the zone that.
Yeah, you're bringing up something amazing though about it, that it could be about white people. And it would be a different story and there would be different characters, but this is about Black people in this situation. And that's informs this story and these characters, like, and it's not about that, but it is. I love that. Well, it's a great point.
Yeah. And I think also, I mean that, and again, I don't know if we talked about it, but it totally, we did a little bit, but not when he was deciding sort of after the fact, but you know, like the Latinx Fries Geek yeah. Squad guy, who working in the Deep Valley, like totally tracks 100% from my experience growing up in Los Angeles. It's, and the sort of punk 90s retro shit he's into, and totally a character that feels very authentic to me, a bit heightened, obviously, because it's a blockbuster movie and these are kind of mythological characters in a way also.
Yep.
But then, and the, you know, Steven Yeun character, and what is it? What does that mean to be
yes.
on a sitcom?
Yes.
On a sitcom as where you're playing an adopted Korean American kid and they've also adopted a chimpanzee, like, and your parents are astronauts. And anyway, it's sort of fed into this larger than life world with acknowledgments to the real social situations people find themselves in, not just white people.
Yeah. It's just when you recognize it in that context, you're like, this is a long way from, you know, 20 years ago, blockbusters. Like it right. really is. It's not even something we could have, like, there was nothing like it, basically.
No, well, I think Jordan and a few other filmmakers have really had to lead the industry to it. Mm-hmm. They've had to show the people with all the money to invest that there is a giant audience for this.
Yeah. The audience that exists is not just the one that they knew about already, right?
Right.
It's that totally. Plus there's others, and it's, yeah. they're not just willing to see one kind of thing. Yeah, it's you have to lead the horse to water.
Yeah, definitely. Which so I hope that all of that acknowledgement, understanding, and intelligence that Jordan brings to it is like, I hope that is what makes these movies not just fully blank, like bring whatever you want to them, but they really focus your mind on certain ambiguities and certain ambivalences, which he rightfully, I think, thinks are sort of underrepresented in a pop culture context. Which, you know,
yeah,
that's where he's working right now. Maybe he'll make a tiny weird art film at some point that he doesn't expect to be a global phenomenon. I don't know.
Well, I really appreciate your time. It was fun to catch up and fun to talk about. It's a great movie.
Thank you.
We'll have you back on the next thing sometime soon.
Cool. That'd be awesome.
Thank you so much. Thanks so much, Nick, for coming on the podcast. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Nope is the kind of movie that didn't exist in so many ways for so long. It's great that it's in the world. It's great that there are movies like this being made. They're about different kinds of perspectives, but also that are about things, like stuff beneath things, like layers of ideas and meaning that we can interpret and think about and reflect on. That is just a powerful tool that movies have. And I've said it so many times, but I love seeing movies in the marketplace that reflect someone's perspective, someone's ideas about the world, and hold true to that. At the same time, it's a super entertaining summer tentpole movie. So what's not to like? Anyway, go see Nope. Head over to nofilmschool.com. You can read all about filmmaking, tech, news, and education there. You can sign up for our newsletter and get a free ebook on screenwriting in the process. Plus, we'll send you all kinds of cool deals that come our way from partners and sponsors as well. Be sure to like, rate, and subscribe to the podcast. Send us questions at editor@nofilmschool.com. We answer them on our weekly show, which comes out Thursdays, and we love hearing from you. Thanks so much for listening.